And that's probably the only airline experience that I've ever had that has been so complete. It was almost like a Disney World type experience where they just had everything right. Everything aligned to Hello Kitty. I was really impressed with that. Welcome to Travel Stories with your hosts, Tom Kim and Trevor Mountcastle. This episode, we talk about a round-the-world Hello Kitty trip. And gosh, there's so many other ways we could title this trip, Tom.
Yep.
We could title it, the trip was almost canceled because of weather delays, and they had to reopen the flight. We could
Hold. What are you trying to do? You can't just put that in the intro. You know, we've been doing this, like, what is this, like, episode, like, what? Are we up to, like, 60 episodes or something?
59.
Are we getting there? 15? Okay, almost there. You think you just started doing podcasts, Trevor, you know? You can't start going into details like that. I mean, whoa. By the way, top of the morning to you. This is a little bit odd for us because, you know, we're usually doing these recordings in the evening. And for once, we're recording in the morning.
And that must be it because I'm having coffee. So I'm like, I'm just wired.
That's what it is. He had coffee. He's not champagne. He doesn't have champagne. By the way, for this episode, just so there's no confusion, Lufthansa First Class. No, don't drink yet. Lufthansa First Class. I'm just letting you know. Lufthansa First Class is the drinking word of the day. And for those of you who are so inclined, you may need to go and grab the full bottle of champagne for this episode. So, okay.
Yeah, go now ahead that and we pause set, it for a moment.
You pause it for a moment. You can put a pause. Go get your Veuve Clicquot. Go get your, you know, Krug, whatever you want. Just go get it. Cristal, go grab some. Get the bottle. The right temperature, though. Must be chilled. This is Trevor. So it has to be the right temperature. And then bring that over here because, you know, it's going to be kind of required, I think, for this particular episode.
A required accompaniment or companion.
Yes, it will be. Yes. Okay. Now you may slowly calm down, you know, let the caffeine flow and ooze. Okay. Now you can start. Okay. Go ahead.
So this trip, how do you follow that up?
I don't know. I just...
That was so beautifully done. It really was. Talk about setting the tone for the episode. I feel like now we have to just rise up to the occasion.
And you know what? If there was going to be a trip to rise up as a travel story, this is a pretty legendary one.
This is actually one of the stories that I think we talked about and kind of led us to wanting to create this podcast. This is one of the three.
This is a very super memorable trip, I have to say. It was not particularly a long one. I mean, it was several days. We were on several different aircraft and carriers and such. But yes, it started off with a bang, didn't it?
It did, yeah. So this was over the 4th of July weekend, probably almost 10 years ago now.
That's right.
Which is crazy. And so we had found Hello Kitty from Chicago. Hello Kitty, by the way, being a particular aircraft. And of course, you know, Hello Kitty, the brand, that Eva Air flies.
E-V-A, by the
E-V-A.
Way.
I keep on wanting to say Eva, like Wally.
I know, like Wally, yes. Or Ita, like in Ita Airline. No. It's E-V-A. I think apparently they're very, very particular about it, if you were to ask the flight crew.
Yes, I think I do remember that. So we had found this flight, and we were being a little bit dicey because we needed a connecting flight. And that connecting flight was from Dulles, Washington Dulles, up to Chicago. You'd think this isn't a big deal, but we had weather that day. So we're sitting in the lounge. You had lounge passes that you graciously guested me in. At this time, neither of us, well, I don't even know why. I think, did we just book that separately?
It must have been.
Because if it was-
Because we're Starlines. We had Starlines business that same day, but I don't know. And maybe the lounge dragons were a little bit particular that day.
Yeah,
this was before Polaris too.
Yeah, I just remember us sitting in that lounge, and it was already like that really stark white lounge, the basement lounge at Dulles in the old temporary terminal, looking at the sky darkening on a summer day and just saying, okay, what are we going to do here? Then we get on the plane, and we're almost at the runway, and they power down the engines. We got some lightning. We've got to wait. And we're sitting here, and we're getting more and more nervous. We're texting back and forth because we weren't sitting next to each other. The captain even came out and welcomed kids into the flight deck. I mean, we are in total, are we going to make this
mode? Yeah, Wasn't looking good.
It was not. We were planning. And if I recall, when we landed in Chicago, we thought there'd be one of those buses, but there wasn't. The little bus connector.
Well, and I think the train also, I think, was not functioning 100%. Like, I forget, because I feel like when we were dropped off by the land side air train, right, between terminals, was at the far, far end of wherever EVA Airlines check-in was. So we had a really long distance. I think I happened to have my suitcase as also a scooter. So well,
you did, but you also, your Achilles heel was
still bothering
was aching
me
at the time.
Yes, it was bothering me at the time. So I'm glad I did have that because I was able to more or less keep up, right? Because we had quite the mad dash from where we deplaned and where we needed to go.
Yeah, I still remember so starkly. There were three of us that got on the train. And we get down and we're just running full bore in Terminal 5. And there's this one lone guy pushing a cart and you could hear the squeaking wheel. Yeah,
I remember, you know, as it's going down the hall. That is exactly what's in my mind. I'm thinking squeaky wheel.
And I remember rushing up to him and saying, is there any way you can check us in?
Three and business class, no check-in. No carry-on, only carry-on only. You know, I think like I remember being out of breath and saying something like that.
Exactly, exactly. And he looks and he's like, give me a second. And he has to call to the gate.
Yes.
And one of those high tense moments.
Yes, yes.
Waiting for the person at the gate to release the ability for him to check three business class passengers in. And the woman on the other end of the walkie-talkie says, yes, you can. And we are just overjoyed. That sense, that collective
sigh of relief.
Exactly. The collective sigh of relief. Sigh of relief. Oh, gosh. This is the coffee speaking. And the gentleman was so kind. He even escorted us through security.
Yes.
He got us through there. There was no lounge time. They were already boarding.
Yep. Yep. And by the way, this is what I think qualifies as a pattern because this was not the first time that I've been with this gentleman and we've had to had a flight reopened. So I think that additional data point has definitely set the pattern for, when I travel with him, sometimes things happen.
Yeah, we talked about it on episode 8 with the guy's trip. That flight had to be open too. I think for you and I, we've had to have three different flights opened in our travels.
I can think of at least three data points, yes.
That said, it's been a while. It's been a while.
That's true. That's
we might
true.
Be due.
Oh, thanks.
Knock on wood, right?
Oh, yeah. Oof. Wow, way to like kind of curse the next trip. I don't see us making it through June without some kind of interrupts.
So we get on the plane and I think we were just sort of like happy that we made it.
Yeah. And I mean, we got the white glove treatment and that we got fully escorted through all the security and everything, right?
We got welcomed by the woman on the other end of the walkie-talkie. She's like, you're welcome. Or something to that effect. He's just like, thank you, thank you.
Yes, yes.
At the time, I still had those little flashlights that were charging bricks. And so I was like handing them out to the woman and to the gentleman that checked us in because I was just so appreciative. Don't do that anymore. Obviously, you don't want to travel with a lot of those charging bricks.
Lithium ion batteries are not exactly the thing you want to have a large quantity of on your person.
Yeah, they're just not as popular nowadays. No. And so we made it for that flight.
And what a flight it was. That was not your average 777 flight. I mean, it had probably among the nicest amenities one could ask for and was super memorable for a lot of reasons, mainly the branding.
Yeah, you had the Rimmel amenity kit and everything was Hello Kitty. You had the Hello Kitty imprinted butter. You had Hello Kitty signage everywhere. Even the toilet paper in the lavatory was Hello Kitty.
And the little cup for you.
Oh, yes,
you
know, the little cup.
The little cup, the toilet paper, yes. Pillows. There was artwork on the walls. You talked about the meal service. It was napkins. It was placemats. It was, like you said, embossed butter with Hello Kitty. It was in the in-flight entertainment on the screens. It was anywhere and everywhere. You could plaster Hello Kitty and Sanrio. They did it.
And that's probably the only airline experience that I've ever had that has been so complete. It was almost like a Disney World type experience where they just had everything right. Everything aligned to Hello Kitty. I was really impressed with that.
Yep. Even pink champagne, right?
Yeah. Yeah. They had the Krug Rosé, if I recall.
Yep.
And Krug, of course, in a business class experience is just phenomenal. I mean,
let alone Rimowa amenity kits. You know, I mean, it's really, you know, EVA has kind of set the bar high as providing a first class level of service. I mean, they're kind of playing from the same playbook that Qatar is, you know, providing essentially first class amenities in their business class cabin.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A reverse herringbone seat. So same seat that you'd experience on American or Cathay in business class. Slight differences in how they stow the tray table, I noticed that because you lose about an inch in knee room. And I was feeling it. I remember I got off that flight and my knees were sore because I'm a side sleeper and I flip over. And every time I'd flip over, I'd hit the dang tray table or the area where the tray table kind of slid into for the person in front of me.
Yeah. I think they provide PJs too. I don't remember them off the top of my head, but I think
they did. Yes.
Yes. Again, another amenity that you're not very often going to get in a business class cabin.
And especially 10 years ago.
Yes.
I mean, this is before Q-Suites, if I recall.
It might have been. I don't know if it was before.
This might have been about the time that Q-Suites was announced. But yes, I mean, it was definitely a very new concept.
It was a new concept. But I guess the difference also was that Qatar was, they were providing some of these amenities, even in their non-Q-Suites.
Oh, yeah. Pajamas and such. Yeah. Yes. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And Qatar, at that time, I think Qatar was starting to go to the reverse herringbone seat that they have on the A380. In mm-hmm. business class, mm-hmm. they had that on the 787. They had that on some of their A350s.
Yep.
So this itinerary was a slog, though, as I recall. So we made it to Taipei.
And guess the surprise we got when we got to Taipei.
Oh, was this where we found out, like, probably like 30 minutes too late that Kevin Song was on our flight?
That's right. Our good friend and acquaintance, Kevin Song, was on the same flight. And we would have met him probably had we had any lounge time whatsoever. But another consequence of our rather rushed connection in Chicago was we had zero time in the lounge. And we were probably, we must have been the last couple of people to board the plane.
It felt like it.
Yeah. So we had absolutely no idea that there were other people that we knew on this flight, which is, that's just insane. And of course, we only find out when we're looking at our phones that when they finally get cell phone signal and internet access that, oh, this is an interesting Facebook hosting. Somebody was on our flight.
Yeah. And it was just a few minutes too late because he was already landside. It was such an unfortunate thing to have missed him. That would have been a lot of fun. That I think he was flying in economy though.
Yeah.
Which would have been painful.
Well, hey, everyone has to occasionally. I've flown to Asia in coach as well, you know, not recently, but not that I prefer to, but you know, it happens.
So I remember three things from our time in Taipei. We had a few hour layover there. You want to take a guess at what those three things were?
I remember the gates. That's what I remember.
Okay, four things.
Oh, okay. Well, I remember gates just because, you know, I have been to, this was not my first time in Taipei, but I guess whatever terminal China Airlines flies out of is not as well decorated, shall we say, or branded as EVA and their gates, because they had a whole bunch of gates with just very interesting decorations and theming. I think they had a Hello Kitty Sanrio themed gate, but they had other interesting gates as well.
Yeah, they had an AvGeek focused one, a lot of aviation stuff.
Yep.
A little play area, I think, even that was aviation focused. Yes. Not surprising for an airport. But then they had like another one. I don't know. Maybe it was like an 80s or 90s type thing.
Yeah.
They had probably what, 6 to 10 different branded gates.
Yes. I mean, otherwise, I remember the airport being a little claustrophobic. I mean, the ceilings were low and I don't remember the airport itself being all that fun. But then I guess they really just, what made it fun were all these, you know, kind of themed gates that just had something interesting. I was like, oh, I haven't seen this before.
Whimsical.
Whimsical, yes. Had a lot of character. Yes, definitely.
So the other things I remember, the EVA crew all had Rimmel Wah emerald green or hunter green carry-on hard body suitcases.
Mm. I somehow didn't pay attention to that detail, but no, that's interesting.
You see the crews walking just like you see the Singapore crews where they're all walking together to their flight. I mean, it's a really cool thing to see. Yes. It's a very cool thing to see. And yeah, they all had that beautiful suitcase, kind of like yours, but in a green.
Yep. Yep.
So that was one. Two was there was a robot in the lounge.
That's right. Yes.
It was the weirdest thing.
It was just random. And obviously they were just, I wouldn't say that it was a super functional item, but obviously it was, I think, taking things back and forth. So.
Yeah, it was just kind of random. And then.
You have arrived in the future.
And I remember the ice cream. I can't remember what brand the ice cream was, but I just remember having ice cream and thinking to myself, gosh, we just need to make it another hour and then we get our flight to Bangkok.
Boy, ice cream at airports, it seems to be a theme.
I mean, ice cream is great everywhere. Why shouldn't it be great at an airport too?
It kind of is, you know, and it's nice. How about this? Any lounge that provides ice cream, I mean, they get an extra star automatically.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you thought EVA business on the aircraft was good, but the lounge has ice cream, guys.
Yeah. Although this was nearly a decade ago, so who knows what it is like now.
Touche. So I think we flew, I'm trying to remember, what was it, Thai or was it EVA that we flew to Bangkok?
I see your memory's a little fuzzy on this flight. Huh. I wonder why that could have been. By the way, I remember it perfectly. It was an A330 Thai Airways in their older business class product.
Oh, I think God, the angled lay flat.
The angled lay flat. Yes, yes. I remember it very crystal clearly, but I was not under the influence of any kind of, you know, beverages.
They had Krug, man. Come on. You can't let Krug go to waste. I mean, if they open the bottle, you got to finish it.
Well, I think you had a couple on the Thai Airways flight as well. And I was just like, whoa, I hope this guy's going to be able to walk off the plane.
It was a long travel day.
It was a long travel day. And we had some travails. We had some travails.
I was still coming down from the fact that they had to open up the Hello Kitty flight. So everything else was a celebration for me. But yeah, they did have some heavy pours on that flight. I do remember that.
They did. And you, I think, were conked out for the majority of the flight.
Well, I mean, I was tired anyway. I just remember sitting in the lounge in Taipei, like just trying to stay awake. And then we switched, right? We had to take Bangkok Air, which is a boutique airline.
And I'm trying to remember, did we stay in Bangkok before we went to Laos?
No, after. No, we connected right to Laos. My gosh, that was four legs back to back to back to back. And I remember getting into Laos. And
by the way, that was our main destination of this entire trip. That was actually our end destination of this trip. It was Vientiane, Laos.
I just remember we got off the plane and we had to go through customs. And I'm looking at the guy and I'm just so exhausted, so tired as we're going through. And it occurs to me that Laos is a communist country.
Well, you know, I was actually asked for a bribe, you know, so I was like,
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I presented my passport and I was like, and he's like, yes. And he was holding up his, you know, I was like, and I was just acting dumb. I was like, huh? I don't know what. Oh, here's my papers. Yeah. Is this the papers that you're looking for? Okay. Yeah.
Papers. Well, at least he didn't throw you out of a blimp.
Yes, there was no Bond villain type of shenanigans after this, but
That was an Indiana Jones Last Crusade reference.
I'm thinking View to a Kill, you know. Here I am thinking entirely the wrong series of movies. Anyway, yes, there you should have said Zeppelin. Then I would have probably related, you know, he didn't have his papers part of it. So, yeah. By the way, Lufthansa First Class. There we go. Everyone, I gave you permission. I gave you permission.
You probably needed it after that.
Oh, wait, I'm going to take a drink here. Okay.
So we get to Vientiane. We stayed at the Crown Plaza. I was really impressed with that hotel. I remember that.
It was odd that Crown Plaza was going to be kind of the nicest place that you could do in a hotel redemption in Vientiane, but it kind of was, right?
It really was. And we got a driver. We were only there for like a couple of days, I think, right? It was either 2 or 3 days.
Yep, yep.
And so we got a driver and we did a little bit of a touring of things we wanted to do. I remember a few things from that tour. I mean, we did the Golden Pagoda, mm-hmm. Kanagata, right? We did what I thought was very interesting. I remember reading about it before we went there. And I think I told you, I said, we got to go to this place. It's called the Patukse or the Victory Gate.
Mm-hmm.
And it's got some interesting history. It is a quote-unquote vertical runway or the tallest runway in the world, depending upon who you talk to, because this is a concrete structure. It looks kind of like the Arc de Triomphe.
Mm-hmm.
Vientiane allows, obviously, having a heavy French influence, probably from colonization days. And the concrete was supposed to be used for a runway because the U.S., or we'll say U.S., some reports that it was CIA, had provided the concrete to get a new runway because there was this quote-unquote proxy war, secret war in the 60s and early 70s that the U.S. was leveraging Laos for aircraft bombing and landing, et cetera. And so instead of building that runway, they built this Patukse or Victory Gate. And it was really interesting because you get up in it and it's like a flea market or, you know, like
a souvenir market
inside. And I thought that was kind of unique. And so we got up all the way to the top and you get a pretty nice view of the city, but it's just a little bit surreal.
I just remember that souvenir market, number one, inside that Victory Gate. And I had kind of a Doctor Who moment because I was like thinking like, how do they fit this gigantic souvenir market in this structure that doesn't look like it's big enough to hold this gigantic, unfortunately, very stuffy room because it's completely, you know, enclosed. and not exactly the most, I think, comfortable place to be shopping for souvenirs. But interestingly enough, I just remember just being much larger room than I was expecting inside this kind of monument. And that was just something that I just remember from my visit. Other than that, yeah, the view from the top, the city skyline, I'm sure it's very different now. Mm. But Vientiane, I will make a quick comment. It really does feel like you're in some place like Ho Chi Minh City or something, but so much quieter, so much less developed, so much more chill. So it's got a lot of the same elements, and even at least from a foreigner's perspective, very similar culture, but very, very much tamer, quieter, and less developed, and in some places great and much nicer, because it's not like hundreds or thousands of motorcycles and little scooters zooming around you as you cross the street. You know, you actually could cross the street as a normal person, not somebody who's used to kind of the craziness of a Vietnamese city like Hanoi or Ho Chi Minh City. And, you know, just felt like the pace of life and everything was just a lot tamer. But obviously, that was some number of years ago, and I don't know what the development situation, or we haven't been back to Vientiane in a number of years, but I just remember that was my kind of initial impression of the city, especially from that vantage point.
Yeah, I do remember that, and so well said. So we had a couple of other stops on this as we were touring, and I'm going to kind of go a little bit out of order of how we actually went, just to kind of close the tie on the one thread of that secret war. We also went to the Cope Visitor Center. And this center was interesting. So because of all the bombing that was happening, et cetera, there were a lot of unexploded ordnance. So the U.S. aircraft, before they landed, they would drop any unexpended ordnance. They'd just drop it right around the border, the Laotian border. And what ended up happening is you've got all this unexploded ordnance, and the Laotians, they're out doing their thing, and they'd be, you know, farming or something else, and they find one, and what happens with unexploded ordnance, they eventually explode. And so what you found was that during and following that war, all this unexploded ordnance was costing so many Laotians their appendages, right? You know, you lose a leg, you lose an arm. And so the Cope Museum Visitor Center highlighted the progression of prosthetics. I would argue that, you know, Laos experienced sort of what we experienced with the global war on terror, with IEDs and everything, where the technology and how they did and made prosthetics really got more and more evolved. And so it was interesting to see the different things that they did to sort of account for or accommodate all that loss. It's a hard museum to go through, but I definitely found it interesting. And, you know, 10 years later, I'm still talking about it. So
right.
Definitely recommend. It's sort of like going to like the Holocaust Museum, right? It's not a great feeling, but it's informative and it's insightful.
Well, they're clearly showcasing how they recovered and how they dealt with the tragedy of all this unexploded ordnance. But it is one of the obviously negatives of whether it be landmines or unexploded ordnances or IEDs, you know, there's a huge human cost to all of these different kinds of warfare that have been waged throughout the 20th century.
Yeah. Then we moved on to something a little bit lighter, though. We ended up stopping, and I can't even remember why we stopped there, but we were down along the river. Was that what river was that? The Mekong?
Might have been. I don't remember. It was kind of part of the itinerary, I guess, that the tour guide had arranged for us. And I remember it being a very, very nice. And, you know, this was, despite it being maybe not the warmest part of the year, but it was still pretty damn hot. So it was nice to have a little bit of some relaxing time, you know, at a nice restaurant, have some good food and a particular drink, right? That has definitely found a warm place in my heart, which is kind of odd.
Yeah, you're not normally a beer person, but they serve us this beer lao. And it was interesting because it's the first time I ever been served beer with an ice with ice in it. But I think, you know, either their refrigeration just wasn't great or, I mean, it was hot as Hades anyway in July in Southeast Asia. And so they deliver that and, okay, we're in third world country. I usually avoid ice, but we'll give it a shot. And so I was surprised how much you took to it. You even bought a six pack after we got
absolutely
home.
I am absolutely not a beer drinker. I actually usually detest the beverage, to be completely honest. That's probably closer to my usual stance on beer. What would you characterize this type of beer as? It was definitely a lighter. What kind of beer would Beer Lao be categorized as in your mind?
I feel like it'd be a lager.
Okay. Well, I just felt like for the weather, for the environment, it just was just the best beverage, I think. Very light to drink, easy to drink, not super heavy alcohol content that I could tell. Very, very refreshing, very clean taste, you know, just whatever it was, it was very favorable, at least to my palate. So it became a favorite, at least probably one of my favorite beers ever, which is saying something.
Yeah. For you, that says a lot. So I think that was probably the end of our highlights from Laos. Would you say that?
I think so. Again, we had some good times at the Crown Plaza. You know, they had a lounge, which was very, very lightly attended. You know, I don't think there were too many guests that had lounge. And I forget why we had lounge.
I think we paid for it.
We may have paid extra for it. Yeah. And that's probably wise, because I think, but you know, it was not a lot of money, if I remember. It was like, you know, maybe an extra, what, $20 or something like that? Something in that range?
Yeah, definitely upgrade. Inexpensive.
Definitely worth it, you know, because, you know, it was just, it really was kind of an exclusive place for us to just enjoy a little bit, some more beer Lao, if I remember correctly. And, you know, some food and beverage while we were there. And I remember they also had a pool. And I think we ran into some of the U.S. diplomatic staff, and I think maybe in both of those venues.
I do remember that. Yeah.
So, which is kind of interesting, which, you know, it definitely seemed to cater toward, again, there were not a whole lot of Western brands at the time. There's one of it may have been one of the few Western branded hotels that were available to us. And so that probably was why we ran into some more of these government, State Department type people.
And you know, there's not a lot to choose when we switch to IHG, when I think we're well documented as Marriott and Hyatt people.
IHG is definitely one of the brands where I probably have the least number of stays. But at the same time, the ones that I've had have for the most part, all been good.
I'd agree with the same. I mean, we did the Intercontinental in Sydney only back in January. So we've enjoyed them. I just say that, you know, it's not where we think to go first.
Yeah, not our first choice in the hotel loyalty game. But I would generally definitely return to Vientiane. I don't think there's any reason why I wouldn't want to go back. It's been a long number of years. It'd be interesting. I imagine a lot of things have changed, and if not gotten better in the time. But if people do not have that on their list of Southeast Asian countries to have visited, I don't see a reason why not to keep it on the list.
And it's interesting too, because I think a lot of people, when they think of Laos, they think of Luang Prabang, if I'm pronouncing that right. And we didn't have the time to get there, unfortunately. One day we'll get there. By choosing Vientiane, it was definitely one that I think not a lot of people talk about. I think the Cope Museum, we had found that from Becky Pacara, who I think we've had on the show in the past. I thought that was interesting. There are some others in the Milan Point community that have been there. It's just not as, you know, popular as some of the other places. Let's see. From there, we just did a quick overnight in Bangkok. I don't remember anything notable.
We stayed at the Marriott, I think. And I think I remember we had a rooftop bar experience.
Yeah.
Which I was actually not a big fan of, because I think it was still light outside and I was melting.
I feel like we were one and done there.
Yeah. I think we had a drink there and then we were like, whoa, I think the key is wait till the sun goes down for those rooftop bar experiences. I also remember we made it to a Thai massage place. I had a foot massage, and I don't know what was going on with my foot massage, but I already had a negative opinion of Thai foot massages. And let's just say my negative opinion of Thai foot massages were reinforced.
And that was especially bad because of your Achilles heel.
That's right. Exactly. So
I was like, I think I had tried to convince you on that too, because yes. I figured that would have helped.
You twisted my arm. And I think this is one of the times where I should have probably pushed back like, no, hell no.
Not just no, hell no. Woo.
Hell no.
Those are strong fighting words.
Well, this was not the last Southeast Asian city that we visited, though, was it?
No. And we got to do something that I think is well documented that we enjoy doing. To get from Bangkok to the next city that we were going to, we flew on a Fifth Freedom flight.
I know some people are going to be like, oh, damn it. Are you talking about Fifth Freedom flights again? I feel like...
I promise we'll do a standalone episode and then we'll stop talking about it.
No, I don't believe you. You're a liar. You're a liar.
At least the standalone episode is true.
Okay.
So I think you booked us on that. And that was back in the days when it was like only, what, 4,500 points for that flight in economy. Did we fly business?
I think we flew business. I'm pretty sure we flew business. And I think it was using Avios. But it's such a short flight.
Yeah. On Cathay Pacific.
On Cathay Pacific. Yeah. A great Fifth Freedom flight, for definitely. And not much to think about it. I mean, I think... I'm trying to remember what lounge we even used at Bangkok. It must have been a Priority Pass lounge or something, because I don't feel like Cathay has their own, do they?
I can't even remember which one it was. I know, yeah. I remember sitting in it and I can't think of what it was.
As you can see, pretty unmemorable, but you know, at the same time, I'm sure it was fine. Cathay, I cannot think of a bad Cathay flight that I've flown. You know, Cathay generally is always pretty strong air carry, even for these short regional ones.
I would agree with that statement. Yeah, they are a very strong product too. And so we flew down to Singapore, We didn't stay overnight there. We only had
I think it was just a
really
long layover, right? Yeah, a long layover. Enough that we left the airport.
Yeah, where did we go?
I think there was a destination. Again, I think Trevor exerted a lot of his preferences when it comes to where we were going, you know, on this. And once again, I think this was someplace where, that was on his list.
Yeah, and you know, it shouldn't have been. I kind of regretted it.
In retrospect, yes.
I remember the way back and just regretting it because so we had gone to this the Costco equivalent, and it is literally like the other side of Singapore.
Did we taxi there or what did we end up? I think we did, which I think that was the right way to go, right?
Well, we were talking about taking the MTA or the MTR or the MRT and we were
one of those combination of letters.
Yeah, one of them. And the voice of reason, aka TK, stated that it would be far better for us and far more comfortable if we just took a taxi.
Well, I was the one with the Achilles injury, so
yes.
No, I think I was probably a little bit more particular than you were on that.
And AC.
And AC. Well, and the thing is, I don't think that particular Costco clone was close to any of the stations, which probably kind of makes sense because, you know, if you're going to be going to the warehouse market, you're probably going to be putting stuff in your car.
Exactly. Yeah. But it was interesting because they had Kirkland signature items. I thought that was
right, pretty interesting. I forgot about that. And honestly, just going back to the whole thing with taxi, I find that Singapore is strangely one of the very few Asian cities where I think taxi can sometimes be more cost effective than mass transit, which is really odd. But I just think, especially if you've got like three people or four people and need to go somewhere from the airport, like you're probably better off taking a taxi than taking the subway or other mass transit options.
Have I ever told you how I learned that valuable lesson?
How?
The first time that we went to Singapore way back in 2010.
I think you probably did say this actually, but yeah, go ahead.
My wife and I are doing a round the world trip, our first round the world trip, first time to Singapore. And we take the MRT or the MTR. And you have to connect to be able to get to Orchard Scott Road.
Orchard Road. Okay.
Yeah, and Orchard to get to the Marriott Tang Plaza. And we get to the hotel and it's fine. I mean, it's not horrible. We're dragging our bags and all that other stuff. We're all sweaty. And we get there and we have a nice stay, two nights stay, did a bunch of stuff. As we're checking out, they ask whether we want a cab or a taxi. And I'm like, oh, we were thinking about just taking the MTR. And she's like, you can do that, but it's only like $10 to take the taxi. And the look of my wife as she narrowly, I mean, if her eyes were bullets, I would have been dead to rights. And so now every time it's a taxi.
Yeah. Yeah. Unless things have changed. I mean, every time I've been to Singapore, it's just that taxi has been the way to go, especially from that first leg from the airport to your hotel. And I think that served me pretty well in general. It's an oddity. I'm not sure exactly, maybe it's the geography or the way that they price taxis or something, but it's just, it always seems to be strangely economical, like cheaper than what I'm expecting most of the time to do taxi transfers from the airport.
Which is even more surprising given how expensive it is to be able to have a car in Singapore.
Yes. Good point. Yes. And maybe that's what it is. Maybe the government almost makes it convenient so that you don't have to have a car because there are these non, you know, ownership car transport options, right? Whether it be, you know, what Grab or Uber or taxi so that you don't have to garage and own a car because there's such great, you know, options. If you do need a car, you just take a taxi or take an Uber or something, right?
Exactly. Okay. So we saw Costco. We went back to the airport.
Disappointed.
Yes. Definitely disappointed. Learn from us. Don't waste your layover doing that. Instead, go to like Marina Bay Sands or something.
Yeah.
Do something fun.
Yes.
And so we're back to the airport because we had a late flight to Europe. And my recollection is because we were flying on, what is it? What were we flying on?
Wait for it. Lufthansa first class. Wait, no, you have to say it, by the way. You have to be the one who says it, by the way.
Touche. So we were flying on Lufthansa first class.
Drink.
Never going to let me live that one down, huh?
Oh, well, come on. That's a historical, you know, artifact at this point, you know.
It is, yes.
That predates this podcast.
So here we are. We're checked in. We've got our fancy Lufthansa first class jacket, and we're off to the Singapore Airlines first class lounge.
Ticket jacket, by the way.
Ticket jacket? What do I call it?
You said jacket. I was like, you know, yeah. I'm wondering if you're thinking like, you know, we had like green jackets from the Masters or something. Like you're going to start making people think like that's an amenity for first class.
I think they should give us like those bomber jackets, you know, like
yeah.
I mean, the amount of Lufthansa first class flying we've gotten, I feel like I deserve it now.
Yes. And sadly, I think the silver with red stripe ticket jacket is no longer for this world, if I'm understanding correctly.
Yeah, we were having a hard time getting that last time, right?
Yes.
I think we did, but like we had to specifically ask.
Yes. Yeah. But that used to be part of the allure of flying Lufthansa first class was receiving the lovely, I think, gray silverish ticket jacket with the red stripe to indicate the first class.
Yeah. I have so many of those. I cherish them.
So do I.
I celebrate them. I'm going to have to like frame it.
Yes. So not only that, we were excited because we had seen the seat map and we were the only two folks on this flight in for the first class cabin.
And that's a first class cabin of what, 12, right? Is it three rows?
Could it be four rows or is it three rows?
I thought it was just, oh, now we got to pull it up.
Now you got, we got to do some on the fly producing, folks. Hold on. Hold,
real
please.
Real time. Hold, please.
Hold, please.
Okay. So it's on the upper deck.
Yes.
Oh, they only show two rows. I thought there were three.
It felt bigger. It's a lot of space. It's a lot of space.
It's a ton of space. As we got on the purser, do we want to talk about that?
Of course we do. This is one of the most memorable parts of this trip is the purser on this flight. Well, it was memorable because it was an A380. And unfortunately, I'll also deflate some of our expectation in that. Unfortunately, we were not alone in this cabin. I think they upgraded some Han Circle members or somebody, some senators.
It was husband and wife, and they were seated in 2A and 2D. And I think you and I were in 1K and 2K.
So that part was not as great, but very memorable because this was the most interesting experience we've had with a crew member, I think, on Lufthansa first class after many, many flights. I cannot think of a crew member with as interesting an introduction as this German gentleman who was at this first class flight.
Yeah. So we've teed this up quite well, I think. So the purser comes over to us as we're boarding, we're sipping our champagne, and he says something to the effect of, oh, have you flown the A380 before? You know, on Lufthansa. I had, but you hadn't. And so we sort of feigned no. And he says something to the effect of, the lavatories have something special just for us gentlemen.
Yes. Special feature just for us gentlemen.
I think I'm going to pass the rest of his verbiage to you because I think you do his accent a whole lot better than I do.
Oh, I don't want to do a German accent.
You've recounted the story so many times.
I have recounted it. Well, just to, you know, stop holding you guys in suspense. The A380 for Lufthansa first class is equipped with something very unique, which is there is a urinal in the bathroom. So, you know, obviously Emirates puts a shower in their extra space that they have. You know, Etihad has, you know, of course, the residence. Lufthansa puts in a urinal. So
that right there, my friends, is the Lufthansa first class experience. On the A380, a urinal.
That is the weirdest. Did I use a urinal? Yes, I did.
I felt like after the way he hyped it up, it was an obligation.
It was not optional. You had to use it. Yeah. You had to use it. This purser ended up being one of the most, you know, I don't know if quite the word misogynistic, but, you know, he was definitely one of the most interesting pursers in that he had definitely a little bit of an attitude toward the other female flight crew that would be servicing us. And he made it very, very clear that we were to, you know, quiz his other flight attendants, the other female flight attendants, you know, because he made it very clear that, you know, hey, I test these ladies on the wine list.
It was worse than that. He said, you must quiz my girls.
Oh, yes. My girls. That's right. You're right. Yes. Yes.
He's like, they study the wine list on their time off. So make sure you challenge them. Try out the wine.
Anyway, it was just weird, you know, because I don't know if this is normal for other Germans or something, but, you know, it was definitely something that would be, you'd think people would be making comments about it.
Yeah. I mean, and it was not just that bad, right? Like a little later in the flight, he says, after your meal, when you're ready to rest, just ask and my girls will prepare your bed.
Yes.
and he says, and they sometimes are cold, but as we know, we men, we run hot. And so if you need the temperature down, you just tell them and my girls will lower the temperature of the cabin.
I'm glad Trevor was here because I had forgotten a little bit about it. You know, a little bit of the fog of memory from years ago. But yes, now I'm clearly remembering. You're right. He did make all these comments.
It was almost like, are you serious? Like we're sitting there like we really want to just start laughing because
I know,
but he's dead serious in the way he's saying this.
This is how he's providing first class service to us gentlemen. You know, that's what it's all about.
And he finishes the flight out as we're landing in Frankfurt. And he's like, did my girls take good care of you? No, just like yes, we were well cared for, sir.
Yes.
It was probably the most unique experience from a purser that I've ever had.
Yes, the most memorable purser we've ever had, and an excellent flight. And actually, I think this is the only time I've actually flown the A380 with Lufthansa. So that was another special one too. But it didn't end there. We got to enjoy more stuff, right?
Yeah, we had the first class terminal, which we made the hike to in Frankfurt, as one does. It's a a favorite of all
of ours. A rite of passage for the miles and points community, almost.
Oh yes,
It's like the Mecca. It's like you must do your pilgrimage.
You walk through the cloud of smoke by the taxi line, and out from the bridge appears this beautiful aura, this oasis in a jungle of gray, and it is the Lufthansa First Class Terminal. You step inside, the air conditioning is on, you step into the elevator, and out you arrive on the second floor lobby. One of the Lufthansa folks waiting at the desk to check you in, to welcome you into your little oasis. Did I oversell it?
Well, hopefully people are also, you know, well, you have to say the word first class, Lufthansa first class, so that, you know, we want to make sure people finish off their bottles toward the end of this episode.
Yes. Well, the Lufthansa first class terminal,
drink.
I think we've covered a lot of Lufthansa first class terminal in the past.
I'm trying to remember, was this our first trip together, the first class terminal? It might have been.
I think this might have been our first trip together at the FCT. Yeah.
Yeah.
And so, of course, we had breakfast. Then we had lunch because we took Lufthansa 418 on the 747-8 Intercontinental to Dulles. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. This is back in the days when they had the little Sprinter van to get you to the back door of the international immigration terminal. We effectively had the two premier first-class products, Lufthansa first-class products, I should say, on that one trip. And it was only like the 70,000... It was 70 or 90,000 points.
It was very, very, I'm sure, points value rich what we did there, because that was my favorite redemption, was to do Asia redemptions on first class with Lufthansa.
I think we did like two or three a year for a while because it was just the best deal going.
It was the best deal. I mean, you know, you go to Japan, you go to Korea, you know, whatever, go to Bangkok. You know, I think I've flown probably to Asia on Lufthansa at least 4 to 5 times that I can think of. And that was definitely my favorite way to spend a lot of different Star Alliance currencies.
I still remember one time we were in Bali and we were late checking out of the hotel because the award space became available at like 10 a.m. and we had to be out. We had to be out at like 10:30 or something like that to get to the airport. And I'm changing our flight and I'm like, I can't leave yet because I need the Wi-Fi. And I'm changing our flight out of Bangkok like in 12 hours from that point. We made our flights, but we regularly changed things up just because the Lufthansa first class and just the beauty of that United award allowing you to connect on the way home to North America.
I guess these products are still available, although they're not, you know, the big man on campus anymore. I mean, now you've got the A350, right?
Oh, yeah, with the Allegris.
Yes. Hopefully, I'm guessing they're going to be rolling out something, I guess, new on the A380s and the 747s at some point.
I mean, if they're going to keep the A380s, I don't know if they're retiring them anytime soon or not.
Well, I mean, they're definitely getting rid of the A340s. I don't know. I mean, it feels like with the delays on the 777s, the 9Xs, that they're one of the, I forget if they're one of the launch customers, but I know that they're in the order book for Lufthansa, right? Because that was part of why Allegris was delayed so long, right? Was that they were hoping to get the 777X from Boeing quite a few years ago.
Yeah. And the Swiss version is too heavy. Did you hear about that?
That's right. That's
they
right.
They have to put
that's
ballast right, yeah. in the tail.
I did hear
because the first class Allegris or whatever they call their first class is too heavy.
That is definitely an engineering blunder. That was a good, but you know, you mentioned before about trying to have kind of that premium experience to, you know, end to be the finale of your trip. Absolutely. I think on this one, we definitely knocked it out of the park with that special service, which unfortunately doesn't exist anymore, of being able to not have to get on one of the mobile lounges at Dulles, but instead be sent to, you know, a Sprinter van and shown the secret door into the immigrations hall at Dulles Airport. That is a very first class experience, hard to replicate because I don't know, short of flying private, I don't know that you're going to be able to replicate that at Dulles Airport. After the end of all your other first class trips, you're just going to just be kind of shuffled into the masses there at the immigration hall.
It's such a shame that they don't do it anymore. I'm surprised that other airlines don't.
Well, we've never flown Le Premier, so we don't know what they do with Le Premier. Usually Le Premier has amazing, you know, landside or ground service, so maybe they do something special.
And that could be. Emirates First didn't when we flew that.
That's true. We arrived on Emirates First, and there was not really anything to distinguish it at all, was there?
No, I was surprised about that. But I mean, you know, to be able to remove that level of friction, you know, was amazing at the time. I had the chance to do that with my father, and he was just like, well, this is a completely different way of flying.
Yes.
Like,
yes.
He's like, we just went to a private club, AKA the Lufthansa First Class Terminal. He's like, they drove us right out to the plane, and now they're driving us from the plane over to the immigrations hall. He's like, I'm ruined.
Yes. I'm glad you were able to share that with your dad. That is an experience that will not be able to replicate easily going forward.
Yeah, so true. Yeah, this was an interesting trip because, you know, we flew that Hello Kitty, which was really awesome. And you'd think that that would be the highlight of the trip. And then you put Lufthansa First Class on the way home. I mean, there was just no bad part of this trip.
It was a great trip. Yep.
Yeah, it was just an AvGeek dream.
Yep. Even the destinations. I mean, you know, being able to visit Vientiane and Bangkok and Singapore and see a little bit of Taipei Airport, you know, just all great things to be able to encounter on top of, you know, all those amazing, the themed Hello Kitty flight, which again is, I think, should be on everybody's bucket list, let alone, you know, first class terminal and Lufthansa First Class. Such an over the top trip. I think we are going to be hard pressed to top this one in terms of getting a Fifth Freedom in, getting a themed flight, getting a, you know, amazing first class experience. I think we're going to be hard topping this, you know, going forward.
And don't forget the purser.
Oh, priceless memories.
Priceless, yes.
Well, I can't think of a better way to close out this episode. Hope you guys enjoyed this travel story. It's definitely one that we enjoyed a lot experiencing. It's something we continue to enjoy the memory of.
Yeah, as you can hear the joy in our voices as we recount it, this was a special one for us. Well, that's the show. Thanks for joining us. And we hope you enjoyed listening.
If you've enjoyed this episode, consider becoming a Milenomics Patreon member and get even more in-depth miles, points, and travel content.
Until then, we hope your next story is a travel story.